It's not summer yet, but it's never too early to start planning our summer book binges and putting our must-read list on hold over at the library.
Steve Paulson is the executive producer of To the Best of Our Knowledge here at Wisconsin Public Radio. He's also one of the station's most voracious readers. He joins us once a month to share some highlights from his adventures in reading. Steve, welcome back.
Oh, it's fun to be here.
Well, what have you got for us this time?
Well, I have several books to talk about, and I was going to start with a book, a collection of short stories by Lydia Davis, who is, I think, one of the most interesting fiction writers around. And she's really revered by a lot of other writers. In fact, last year, she won the Man Booker International Prize. And she's, I mean, the thing that people really notice about her is a lot of her stories are very short. Now, she has some stories that are sort of the conventional length of, you know, 20 to 30 pages. But she has other stories that are a paragraph long, a few sentences, sometimes a single sentence.
So she's pushing the boundaries there.
Exactly. And she's obviously very exacting about the language that she uses. And she sometimes is writing about her dreams. She has this whole section of stories about cows. She lives out in the countryside. Or sometimes it's just kind of observations about what she's thinking about, sort of portraits, glimpses of her inner life. And they tend to get a little philosophical.
And how is it for reading? Is it good stuff to read? Does it hold you when these things are so short?
Well, do you want a taste?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So let me, I'll read you a couple of the shortest stories. Well, not the single sentence stories, but so you can decide for yourself. So here's a very short one called The Dog Hair. The dog is gone. We miss him. When the doorbell rings, no one barks. When we come home late, there was no one waiting for us. We will find his white hairs here and there around the house and on our clothes. We pick them up. We should throw them away, but they are all we have left of him. We don't throw them away. We have a wild hope if only we collect enough of them, we will be able to put the dog back together again.
That's a downer. But yeah, a very short, a story in a microcosm.
It is. I mean, there's sort of a, you know, beginning, middle, and end, kind of, in a few sentences.
Yeah.
But, you know, what she's doing is she's kind of making you think. She's sort of almost throwing an idea out there just very concisely. And can I read you another one?
Yeah, please.
So there's, she, as I mentioned, she often does stories that are kind of recounting dreams of hers. And, you know, so a lot of the, I mean, we all have dreams. And, you know, they're usually just kind of throwaway things. And, you know, she turns them into literature in a way. So anyway, here's one called Awake in the Night. I can't go to sleep in this hotel room in this strange city. It is very late, 2 in the morning, then 3, then 4. I am lying in the dark. What is the problem? Oh, maybe I am missing him, the person I sleep next to. Then I hear a door shut somewhere nearby. Another guest has come in very late. Now I have the answer. I will go to his room and get in bed next to him, and then I will be able to sleep.
Ooh la la. Wait, so that is a dream or a real thing?
That's a dream. No, that's a dream.
Is she up front? Does she say this?
She says, yes, it says dream on the bottom. So there's a whole collection of these. So, you know, you can take them for what you want. So it's just like, it's almost like little kind of thoughts that are put out there. And as I say, she has longer stories as well. And so it's just, it's kind, to me, it's very liberating to read something like this because it's, oh, you know, I don't have to, I mean, I don't write short stories myself, but if I did, I could imagine that, you know, I don't necessarily have to sweat it out and, you know, construct a very elaborate story. I mean, stories can come in all shapes and sizes, and it's whatever grabs the reader. And so she really is sort of expanding, I think, the boundaries of what literature is.
And that sounds like a great one to read if you are really interested in sort of the boundaries of literature and what's happening at the cutting edge there. What if you just want a really good read and something's going to make you turn the pages really fast?
Okay, well, that leads us directly into the next, actually, couple of books that I want to talk about. There's a writer named Jeff Vandermeer who has a trilogy coming out, and it's kind of this very unusual concept of what he's doing. He's actually publishing 3 books in a single year. So 2 books have already come out. I've read them both. The first one is called Annihilation, and the second one that's just out is called Authority, and a third will be out later this year, and that's all part of what he calls the Southern Reach Trilogy, and they've all been optioned for the movies by Paramount Pictures. They're kind of sci-fi stories, very hot. I mean, this will be on people's radar, and so it's sort of this mix of science fiction. There's kind of a little element of horror here, you might say. He calls them weird fiction. In fact, he and his wife Anne edited a whole anthology of writing called Weird Fiction.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It means kind of stories about the inexplicable. Not necessarily the supernatural, but it's stuff that you can't really explain. And so the idea for this series is Jeff Vandermeer himself had a dream where he was walking down into kind of a tunnel in the ground and sort of going down and down, and noticed there started to be writing on the walls, and the writing itself was alive. It was pulsating. And then sort of kept walking down further and then realized that the writing was getting fresher and fresher. It was sort of like more alive, and realized that if he walked down more, he was going to encounter the creator of the dream. Mm. And he woke up. And so he thought, oh, my goodness, you know, that's the basis of a story. And he's someone who, because he kind of writes in this vein of weird fiction, he actually intentionally sort of tries to cultivate sort of tapping into his subconscious to sort of get a glimpse of non-ordinary reality, you might say. So the basic premise of these stories is there is this weird area. It's kind of in Florida. It's sort of a slightly alternative world. And some strange stuff has happened, like in the swamps of Florida. People start dying there. Strange creatures start emerging. So then the government shuts it off. They create a border there, and there's this secret governmental agency called the Southern Reach, and they're kind of in charge of making sure people don't go in there. But they also send a few expeditions in. So there, this one story is there are four people who go in, and they slowly either die or go mad. Mm. And they sort of find all kinds of strange stuff. And so the stories are all about, so what is all of this about? And I could give you a taste of this,
yeah,
if you
definitely
would like.
Please.
So this is from the first book called Annihilation. And so the main character, the narrator, who just goes by the name The Biologist. So she's kind of describing some of the stuff that she has seen. And it's set in kind of an area of Florida where actually there are dolphins that come into sort of the fresh water. So it's sort of a playoff of that. And so she goes, I knew that the dolphins here sometimes ventured in from the sea, had adapted to the fresh water. But when the mind expects a certain range of possibilities, any explanation that falls outside of that expectation can surprise. Then something more wrenching occurred. As they slid by, the nearest one rolled slightly to the side, and it stared at me with an eye that did not, in that brief flash, resemble a dolphin eye to me. It was painfully human, almost familiar. In an instant, that glimpse was gone, and they had submerged again, and I had no way to verify what I had seen. I stood there, watched these twinned lines disappear up the canal back toward the deserted village. I had the unsettling thought that the natural world around me had become a kind of camouflage.
Oh, that does sound intriguing.
So strange creatures, human-like. It turns out they have powers. There's sort of this metaphor of maybe this area is in mysterious area X is infecting the rest of the world that we know. And these stories are what's going on.
Oh, that sounds chilling. So those are going to be made into movies, you said?
Apparently. Well, they've been optioned
for the
movies. So I would not be surprised. I mean, they seem rather cinematic, I have to say.
It's nice to know that if you read the first two of those, that there will be a third in the year.
Which is coming out in the fall. Yeah.
Which is more than we can say for readers of George R. R. Martin's books. Which are never
coming. Right, what, every 5 years or something like that?
If that, yes. Right? All right, well, let's move on to the last pick you've got. This one is another big prize winner.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is nonfiction. It's called Tom's River by Dan Fagan, a science journalist. And this is the book that actually won the Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction just this last month. And I am quite sure that this will become a classic of environmental journalism in the years to come. And it's about it's a story about cancer clusters in a town called Tom's River on the New Jersey shore. And basically the story is back in the 1950s, a chemical company set up a dye manufacturing plant, and it brought all kinds of good things to the town. I mean, it brought jobs, it brought they did a lot of charitable work in the community. But this manufacturing plant was dumping its toxic waste straight into the ground. In fact, it was piping it, some of it straight out into the ocean. And later on in the 1980s and 90s, lots of cases of cancer started coming up. And some of the parents said, you know, I bet it has something to do with this manufacturing plant. But it was really hard to prove. No one really wanted to talk about it. You know, people liked having the manufacturing plant there. So this is really a story of how scientists and sort of prodded by parents and nurses started to investigate this. And it turns out it's actually incredibly hard to prove cause and effect of, okay, you think that you see this environmental waste there, these toxins, and to sort of prove that this leads to cancer. And so Dan Fagan in this book, he's basically walking us through the science of this. And I mean, it's a 500-page book, so it's very detailed.
It sounds like there's lots of terrain that he explores in there. And one of those is as you said, how hard it is to establish causality between
right.
whatever the pollutant mm-hmm. is, whatever the toxin is, and the cancer clusters. What other nooks and crannies does he get at? What questions does he raise?
Well, he's raising there's the whole science of this. So, if, you know, you're looking for patterns of exposure, you're looking for places where there's high exposure, and then looking for other more cases of this, and it involves computer models and all of that. There are the ethics of this. There's the legal settlement. One of the morals of this story, in a way, is these families ended up getting a legal settlement, getting money. But it's not what they got somewhere between $100,000 and $500,000 in some cases for their children that died. So, I mean, obviously not enough money, but it's what they could get in the legal system. And then the manufacturing plant closed there in New Jersey, moved to Alabama, later moved to China. And what he's saying is, you know, chances are the same story is happening in China, where there is less regulation, or other parts of the world. And then he has this very chilling conclusion. He says, right at the end of the book, the chief legacy of this whole case was to solidify government opposition to conducting more investigations like this. I mean, it took years to try to sort of pinpoint this correlation between environmental toxin exposure and then these cancer clusters. No one really wants to do this. And so, I mean, part of his conclusion is, you know, these kinds of investigations will only happen, and they should happen, when there's enough pressure brought to bear. And it's probably going to be from parents, from concerned citizens, because, you know, the local politicians probably are not going to want to do that.
Excellent. Well, another one that's sounds like a serious and important read, a Pulitzer Prize winner. Steve, thank you so much for coming by and sharing these with us.
Oh, it is always a pleasure.
That was our Lord of the Books, Steve Paulson. He's also the executive producer of Wisconsin Public Radio's To the Best of Our Knowledge.